My name is Michael. I am an addict. I'm grateful to be here by the grace of God and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. For my benefit, if you would, I would like to say the Serenity Prayer. After a moment of silence, to do with as you wish. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. I'd like to thank Ronnie for sharing tonight and all of the speakers that I've heard this weekend. And like Ronnie, I would like to welcome those of you who are new to Narcotics Anonymous. You are the most important people at this or any other meeting. It's a high honor and privilege to be here and share tonight, one I never imagined. Never imagined I could stay clean for 30 days, let alone speak in front of this many people. I'm grateful to be here, and I welcome you to this way of life. On November 23rd of last year, I was coming home from one of the best meetings of Narcotics Anonymous in the world, the Ella Hill Hutch Group on Sunday in San Francisco. And on my way home from that group, I stopped at my corner store and I saw across the street two individuals attacking a homeless person, chasing him up and down the streets, chasing him into the middle of Market Street, a four-lane boulevard, themselves following him into traffic, attacking his shopping cart, screaming the most horrible things, that he was worthless to get a job, taunting him. And I watched this situation develop for about 5 minutes. It went on for that length of time, and at a certain point I intervened and I screamed stop, and the two individuals who'd been torturing this homeless person immediately turned from 25 feet away from me and ran toward me and attacked me and chased me into the middle of Market Street, across traffic, knocked me down. I fractured my shoulder and my face was beat up fairly badly, and I went to the hospital. As a result of that attack, I didn't work for 3 months. I had to take pain medication, and a lot of things in my life changed. There's been a lot of change in my life. Oh, the doctor said I would never be able to do this. This is a good photo opportunity and to talk about my outfit. I lost my bracelet, but it's really not important at this point. The point is, through God and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, I survived that incident, and there's been an enormous amount of change in my life in the time since then, and I'll talk about that later. The other thing I'll mention in that context, I went by the WSO archival display yesterday, picked up our newest book, Miracles Happen, and I looked in a, there was a binder that had some archival writings of Jimmy. And I like the things that Ronnie said about our history and about Jimmy, and I'm going to touch on some of those same themes. And in this unpublished writing of Jimmy's, one of the things that it said, and I'm paraphrasing, is that we all know the mask of tragedy. We would do well to cultivate the mask of comedy as well. And in this talk tonight, I'm going to wear both masks and maybe get honest to some extent, and the truth will come through in between. So, I felt different all my life as a kid. I was a very lonely, unhappy child. I was a miserable person before I came to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. There was divorce in my family, abuse, neglect. The disease of addiction was present. I was the kind of kid who was, and you may already have guessed this, non-athletic. I was picked last for every kind of team you could possibly imagine. Baseball, kickball, softball, jacks. I know I'm not alone today. And although my particular circumstances may have been why I felt different, may be different, I think from the time I came to my first meeting, I heard that other people, for a variety of reasons, felt different as well. And I think that's one of the things that unites us. When I was in high school, I came out when I was 14, and in fact, it's probably, and I grew up in San Francisco where I still live and where I used and where I got clean. And it was sort of like everybody else had known for some time, but I acknowledged it publicly. I was very unpopular, very unpopular. And yet I did things like I ran to be president of my high school student body class. One of the worst experiences of my life, at that point it was, since after that it wasn't, was the speech that I gave in front of about 200, 300 people in my school, and they laughed at me. And it was a miserably painful experience. I was a teenage drug addict. I started using when I was 14. I was suicidal when I started using. As a result of some of those circumstances, the family that I had grown into. It's true that drugs saved my life. I think if I hadn't found drugs when I did, I don't know that I would have survived my teenage years. I was often suicidal and depressed after that. Within a short period of time, I started using every day. I used a variety of different drugs. I dropped out of high school at a certain point. I continued to be suicidal during periods of time. I got into more and more trouble. I went out to bars and clubs and bathhouses in San Francisco starting when I was 17. I left home. I couldn't work. I was not employable. I'd had some friends who I used with, and one of them had told me a story one night, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, about how he had robbed some drug stores in Atlanta and buried the money out in some suburban field somewhere and forgot where he buried the money. And the part of the story that made an impression on me was what a good idea it would be to rob drug stores and how I wouldn't forget to bury the money. And one day after I'd been suicidal, in fact, I tried to kill myself by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and that didn't work. I woke up one morning, I had no money, I had no drugs, and I decided to rob a drugstore. I did not have a gun, I was afraid of guns. I had a butcher knife. And like I said, I dropped out of high school. I could have gone to an Ivy League college, but my drug addiction got in the way, so I was very bright. And I had analyzed this crime problem. And I already had that great tip from my friend about not burying the money. And it occurred to me that the key problem was that people would recognize you and you could be identified. So the key to successfully committing crimes was to disguise yourself. And I was living with a woman at the time. So I tried on a few of her things, and I walked to a drugstore near my house, my neighborhood drugstore, butcher knife in tow, and I robbed it. 6 days later, I went back to the same drugstore and I robbed it again. One of the times I forgot to take the money. I don't remember which time. I got arrested a few days later. I took a cab. Okay. So then I got locked up. I tried to stop using. I was facing all of these terrible charges. I got bailed out. I tried to stay clean for the first time in my life. One day I woke up. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted a certain drug to do it. I didn't have that drug. I knew I could get some at a drugstore. And I robbed 4 drugstores in one day, walking from drugstore to drugstore. Okay. As a result of that, I was locked up again. I went to the California Youth Authority. I was there for 512 days. I was 18 years of age. For the first time, I was exposed to the 12 steps. I had a desire to stop using and to change my life. When I got out on parole in September of 1980, I had to see a parole officer. I wanted to stop using. I continued to use while I was locked up, of course, to the best of my ability. I stayed clean for 12 days. After I got out, I got loaded. I was as insane as when I had been locked up 512 days before, but I had to go to some kind of program as a condition of my parole. I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting as a result of some outpatient treatment program that I went to sometime in October of 1980. I went to 2 meetings a week. I was not willing to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, something we suggest to those of you who are new. I was not willing to get a sponsor, something we also suggest. I was not willing to introduce myself as a newcomer more than the first, second meeting. I did use again on November 10th of 1980, and the only remarkable thing about it was that that was the last time I used, and my clean date is November 11th of 1980. Now we get to the more serious part. It will be helpful. I'm going to cry. There are some stories I'm going to tell that I can't tell without crying. If you want to cry along with me, that's good. You've done a good job laughing along so far. Thank you. This is a good point. There's a couple things I'm going to read tonight, because I did give this some thought since I knew there'd be more than 10,000 of you. And I want to ask my friend Trish to come up and read. She's going to read, the back of your program has part of something that's in our literature about diversity, and she's going to read that last part from the 12th tradition, and it works how and why.
I'm an addict. My name is Trish. Hi. We pray that Narcotics Anonymous never becomes a gray, faithless collection of addicts without personalities. We enjoy the color, the compassion, the initiative, the rough and tumble liveliness that arises from the diverse personalities of our members. In fact, our diversity is our strength. We find that the stronger our individual members are, the more strongly united our fellowship becomes. This is a great paradox of NA recovery. In joining together in a commitment to the greater good of Narcotics Anonymous, our own welfare is enhanced beyond measure. In surrendering self-will, humbly placing whatever individual power we may have at the service of the whole, we find an amazing power, not only greater than our own, but greater than the sum of all its parts. In serving the needs of others selflessly, anonymously, we find our own needs served, in turn, far better than we ever could have imagined. In joining anonymously in a fellowship with other recovering addicts, placing the welfare of the group ahead of our own spiritual growth is enhanced beyond measure, not diminished. This is what Tradition 12 means when it says that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. So long as we place spiritual principles first, our individual personalities can grow and flourish like never before, ensuring that our fellowship always also continues to flourish, strong and free. Our common welfare depends upon our unity. The only hope we have of maintaining that unity amidst the tremendous diversity we find in Narcotics Anonymous is by the application of certain common principles, those found in the 12 traditions. So long as we place the practice of those common principles before the exercise of our individual personalities, all will be well.
Thank you, Trish. The point, and this goes into this next story, I think unity is very important to me. I think it's the most important thing. And what's most important about this meeting is us. Not what I have to say. What we'll remember is that we were all here together. We are the message. We'll remember that we were here more than anything that we hear, the experience of our unity here together. when I was a newcomer, in February, I came in November. In February of 1981, the Third Northern California Convention was happening here in San Jose. The man who's my sponsor now, he wasn't my sponsor at the time, Bud Gay, talk about a Freudian slip. Bud Kay had rented a suite at the Hyatt over by the freeway. I'm sure some of you are staying there. And he encouraged me to come down. And all by myself, I got on the Caltrain, which many of you have probably taken, and came to my first Narcotics Anonymous convention. And there were 9 Narcotics Anonymous meetings in San Francisco at that time. I did not really understand that California was a special place in Narcotics Anonymous, and that I was one of the luckiest addicts in the world, that I was where I was when I got clean and was able to go to 90 Narcotics Anonymous meetings in 90 days when I became willing to do that, and that there were many, many, many people with many, many years clean here, although there was no literature. The gray review form of our basic text did come out about that same time. And that service effort from those who had come before me had already started, and I benefited from that in early recovery. And some of those meetings in San Francisco had as few as 2 or 3 people. And we would sit around a table and everyone would share on several topics over an hour and a half, and we would have a meeting. And in San Jose that year, there were around 1,000 addicts, as I recall. I don't recall exactly, and that's not important. What's important, and the point of the whole story, is that I was never the same again. And so I know from my own experience that those of you who are new here tonight and present at this convention in the meeting will never be able to forget us. This is my 8th World Convention. I've been blessed. First time I've ever spoken. My first one was in New York in 1983. Hey, you know, I told that story without crying. I never do that. I thought the best meeting I ever went to was at that convention in New York, and Nona, who died this just past year, spoke at the Sunday morning meeting. I heard Jimmy Kay speak Saturday night, and Father Dan. And Nona was so grateful she cried through the entire meeting, the Sunday morning meeting, and just about every addict in that room cried along with her, because we felt that gratitude that we were clean. I went to Washington, I went to London, I went to New Orleans, Portland, Toronto. The Worldwide Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous touched me early in my recovery. And although I am from California, I consider myself a member of Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, and my focus is on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. And another thing I wanted to say to those of you who are new is our basic message. Just for today, you never have to use again. My first talk was, I had about 60 days, and I was going to one of these little meetings, and They asked me to speak, and I thought that they had recognized how much recovery I had accomplished in those 60 days. And so for an hour and 20 minutes, in an hour and a half meeting, I proceeded to tell my story. 2 minutes were devoted to recovery. I lived with my mom, mom's recovery house, the first 10 months that I was clean. I celebrated my 21st birthday clean in Narcotics Anonymous. Whether you identify with my story or not, the external things are not important. I have a strange story. The important thing is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. In the first 5 years that I was clean, I worked the steps to the best of my ability. I started my first, well, the whole part of my story is about powerlessness and unmanageability. That's insanity. And that provided a foundation for me to surrender to the program, the same kind of gift of desperation that Ronnie was talking about I had as a result of the trouble that I got into and the experiences that I had. I made my first decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him, and I had a very limited understanding of God. I really didn't believe I could have my own higher power, and I turned my will and my life over to a Dunhill cigarette lighter. That made sense to me at the time. But the important thing was not what higher power I had at that point in time, but there was a sincerity in my decision. And what I actually did was I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to Narcotics Anonymous. I made a decision to do what you suggested, and I proceeded to do that, and I acted on that decision when I had about 3 months clean, just after that San Jose convention and the hope and inspiration I got from that to start that fourth step. When I had 7 months clean, I did my first fifth step, and I rushed through the important steps, 6, 7, and began a process of becoming willing to make amends and make amends. And to the best of my limited ability as a very young, arrogant addict, I started that process of building a foundation and doing what we do around here. I'm very grateful that I did that because it helped me to survive my own self-hatred, self-will, and self-destructiveness, which did not go away when I stopped using. I did not know how much I did not know about how to live until I experienced my capacity to create wreckage in my recovery. And with each year that I stayed clean, I had more and more bottoms to point to in different areas of my life. The AIDS epidemic started, and I saw people who I met in Narcotics Anonymous for the first time in my whole life. Even though I was full of self-hate and self-destructiveness, I was happy for the first time in my life. I told you how miserable I was before. And I met people, and I let them love me to a certain extent, much less than I was able to love and become attached to other people. And some of those people got sick from AIDS and died as early as 1983. And that was sort of my first taste of life on life's terms. And I firmly believe that it was my incomplete, imperfect effort to practice the steps, to go to meetings, thousands of meetings. I went to hundreds of meetings in my first few years clean. And to be of service, to make coffee, to be a group treasurer, to be involved, to be active, to participate in the growth and development of Narcotics Anonymous, to try and find your love and acceptance, to be of service, often for all of the wrong reasons, and apply these principles at the same time, that when life showed up and started happening to me and tragedies happened, that I was able to go through them and not take anything. I'm forever grateful to those people who carried the message to me. And one thing I'm forever grateful to those of you who were here when I got here. And I want you to do something for us. All of you, and this is going to be hard for some of you, because once you get into those double digits, you'll notice it at the countdown tomorrow night, you become incapable of standing up for more than 3 seconds. You just sort of pop up and then pop right back down. I would like all of you whose clean date is prior to November 11th of 1980 to stand for at least 10 seconds on the count of three, and allow us to acknowledge you. One, two, three. Thank you for carrying the message to me and to us. We need you. I love you, Jerry. I told you how I worked that third step the first time. When I had about 8 years clean, I wanted this job. It was a very good job. It involved going to Europe, opening a European service office for the World Service Office in Europe, and I desperately wanted this job. And I applied for this job, and I did not get this job. And when that happened, I had, like I had done with other things in my life, made a decision to turn my will and my life and this job over to the care of a higher power, which by that point in time I had come to understand better. And when I did not get the job, although I was disappointed, I accepted the outcome. And after 8 years clean, and I still had a lot of problems at that time, I at least felt like I had made some progress in the third step in being able to accept God's will in my life when things did not go my way. This is hard. This part is personal. This part's very personal. I've been to every Northern California convention since that third one in San Jose. And about 2.5 years ago, I met somebody at the Santa Clara convention, where some of you are staying out there by Great America. It's the first time I ever met anyone at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. And we struck up a friendship, and he was very persistent in pursuing a friendship over a period of several months. And the more I saw of him as a friend, the more, at a certain point, I realized that I was in love. And he realized that he was in love, and I fell in love. I had 15 years clean at this time, and I had not fallen in love up to that point. It took that, that's just my experience. That's what happened to me. It took that length of time of me working the steps and applying these principles for my heart to open up to that degree. And it did. And his did. And we had a wonderful first year. I told you about the attack in November, and we'd been together a little over a year at that point, and we'd had some problems at that point. And the attack and what I went through, the stress of that, made everything worse. I didn't stop. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I was in a lot of pain. I was very needy. I got extremely depressed as a result of the attack. I needed to be taken care of, and he did help to take care of me and was supportive, as was the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. As I had experienced other times in my recovery, you people were there for me and carried me through these circumstances. Three weeks ago tonight, I asked my partner for a long separation. And it's been painful and difficult to go through that process. I did a fifth step with my sponsor. It's part of taking care of myself. I'd been working on an inventory about the relationship, taking my own inventory and an inventory of the relationship, and I did a fifth step with my sponsor about it a few weeks ago. The third step, I know what my will is in this situation with this relationship. I want it to work out. I know what my will is, what outcome I would like for there to be. It's not under my control whether I get my way, whether I have to turn my will over, and I've done that. And the separation is a reflection of that. And although I'm in a good place in my life and have been so excited and happy about the high honor and privilege of speaking here tonight, there is that pain in my heart from these circumstances, and it's very fresh and very raw. And it's part of life's on life's terms. Just because you get asked to be a main speaker at the World Convention doesn't mean that things are going to go your way, or that something that you really don't want to have happen is going to happen. And that's my recent experience. This part is even more personal and more risky, and I've been on my best behavior tonight. I've stayed off a soapbox, which I don't always do. And I want to read something that's just for me. This is a poem that he wrote for me and gave to me when we talked and agreed on the terms of our separation 3 weeks ago tonight. It's called Through the Night. The twilight is approaching, and I know not how to stop it, nor do I mean to. It is a natural occurrence, the requirement for a new day. Though stark in its inevitability, there remains hope in the starlight. Look, I see Mars, so strong and vibrant, yet so distant, almost aloof, untouchable. Can you just feel the fear? Barely, but it's there. He is my kin. Look, I see Venus. That's me. So cool and collected, and so near. Too near. The clouds shroud the heat that could burn. It's only meant to comfort, of course, but there are storms. The sky is so gorgeous in its darkened state. One need only peer across the universe to notice. So much light. Can you see? The comfort of daylight is a thing of faith. It will occur. Uncertainty lies in the absence of knowing. What will the new dawn expose? Look, a shooting star. I wish I may, I wish I might, I wish upon this star tonight. May our wishes come true. That part was just for me. My sponsor gave me specific directions that I was supposed to have fun while I was up here. And I don't know. I'm trying. I want to thank the committee for asking me to share. The host committee from Northern California, my home region, submitted my name to the World Convention Corporation, and it's especially touching that they did, you know, recommend me, and I thank the committee and the World Board and the outgoing World Convention Corporation for making this convention possible. I want to ask my sponsor Buddy to come up and read We Do Recover from Jimmy's story.
My name is Bud, and I'm an addict. Hi, family. Okay. When my addiction brought me to the point of complete powerlessness, uselessness, and surrender some 15 years ago in 1950, there was no NA. I found AA, and in that fellowship met addicts who had also found that program to be the answer to their problem. However, we knew that many were still going down the road of disillusion, degradation, and death because they were unable to identify with the alcoholic in AA. Their identification was at a level of apparent symptoms and not at the deeper level of emotions or feelings, where empathy becomes a healing therapy for all addicted people. With several other addicts and some members of AA who had great faith in us and the program, we formed in July of 1953 what we now know as Narcotics Anonymous. We felt that now the addict would find from the start as much identification as each needed to convince himself that he could stay clean by the example of others who had recovered for many years. That this was what was principally needed has proved itself in these passing years. That wordless language of recognition, belief, and faith, which we call empathy, created the atmosphere in which we could feel time, touch, reality, and recognize spiritual values long lost to many of us. In our program of recovery, we are growing in numbers and in strength. Never before have so many clean addicts of their own choice and in a free society been able to meet where they please to maintain their recovery in complete creative freedom. Even addicts said it couldn't be done the way we had it planned. We believed in openly scheduled meetings, no more hiding, as other groups had tried. We believed this differed from all other methods tried before by those who advocated long withdrawal from society. We felt that the sooner the addict could face his problem in everyday living, just that much faster would he become a real productive citizen. We eventually have to stand on our own feet and face life on its own terms, so why not from the start? Because of this, of course, many relapsed and many were lost completely. However, many stayed, and some came back after their setback. The brighter part is the fact that of those who are now our members, many have long terms of complete abstinence and are better able to help the newcomer. Their attitude, based on the spiritual values of our steps and traditions, is the dynamic force that is bringing increase in unity to our program. Now we know that the time has come when that tired old lie, once an addict, always an addict, will no longer be tolerated by either society or the addict himself. We do recover.
If you remember nothing else that is said here tonight, remember this. Narcotics Anonymous works. I wish you well in your recovery. I'm grateful. Thank you.